The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Who's our novice at the Vihara? So in my little bio, it said that I came across the teachings when I was a teenager. So I was 14 when I first heard the Buddha's teaching, and it had a profound effect on my life. And Anagarika Maria was only 12 when she first heard the teaching. So we were lucky that even in England and Wales, where it's not the most obvious place to come across the Buddha's teaching, we were both exposed to that at a young age. So as you can see, it's had a profound effect on both of our lives. So I've been reflecting a little bit on the first two teachings in the Dhammapada. I don't know if you're familiar with the Dhammapada. It's short teachings of the Buddha, and the first two verses, they go, there's different translations, and actually Gill has done a very lovely translation of the Dhammapada. But the first two verses say, mind is the forerunner of all things. So sometimes it's translated as things, sometimes as mind states, sometimes as mind objects. So mind is the forerunner of all mind states or mind objects, thoughts. Mind is their chief. They are mind-wrought or mind-made. If one speaks or acts with an unwholesome mind, it's actually the word is evil mind, but that's kind of a bit of a loaded word. If one speaks or acts with an impure or unwholesome mind, suffering follows one, like the wheel that follows the foot of the ox, an ox cart follows the ox. If one mind is the forerunner of all things, or mind states, or mind objects, mind is their chief, they are all mind made. If one speaks or acts with a pure mind, happiness follows one as one's never departing shadow. So sometimes the words pure and evil can be a little bit problematic. But what this teaching is pointing to is the origin of suffering and the origin of freedom from suffering. So it's really important to investigate a little bit further, even if the immediate response is like, pure mind, evil mind, But just to look a little bit closer, because it's actually pointing us to the way that we create suffering in our own lives and in the world around us, and in the way that we can live free from that. So, when I think for many people, before we start to practice, this perception is that the problems in our life are caused by something external. So it's because that person speaks to me in that way, or it's because my work is too challenging, or it's because I've got an ailment in my body, and that's why I'm suffering. So in the beginning, it appears to be the external appears to be the cause of our suffering. And, we can do what we can. We try hard to manipulate that, to make it the way we want, so that we're not going to suffer, so we feel good. But I'm sure anyone who's tried, you can get a little bit of good result here and there, but you can't actually sort it out. If everybody here tried to arrange the situation in the way they liked, then it would be impossible, because we'd be in conflict with each other. Our likes won't be the same. So it begins there, where we're looking outside of ourselves, blaming outside of ourselves for our suffering, our difficulties. And then when we start to practice meditation, then we begin to see the noise of our mind, all the things that are going on in there, all of the voices of our conditioning that might be quite critical sometimes, unaccepting or judgmental, and then we start to see that, or we might be very intolerant, very easily angered, or wanting to drift away. Don't really want to quite be here with this difficult world. You know, I just want to have a nice dream, a lovely day, be with lovely people, you know. And we can do that a little bit, but it's not really, you know, you can't manage that every day. So, so you know, these are the things we do. Rather than being with, fully with this as it is in our life right now, in this moment, we're looking for something else. We're trying to push it away, make it different, or only have that nice bit, only have that lovely bit. And in the time before I became a nun, that the year or so, or a few years actually, before I became a nun, I started to notice that, you know, I would experience really wonderful things. I'd have lovely friends, I had a wonderful relationship, and lived in some good places. But then it was almost like a perfect balance, that for every wonderful thing I had, there'd be an equal awful thing. So for every wonderful person in my life, there was an equal awful person in my life, you know. Or for every wonderful condition, there'd be an equal awfully challenging condition. And so even though the good was really good, you know, and actually got better as time went by, the bad kind of got worse too. So the idea of just moving towards what's nice and what feels good and what's pleasing, it kind of lost its reality to a large degree, because I could see this is a package deal, you know. You don't get one without the other. And maybe you can for a while, but then, you know, the other always comes in at some point. So, you know, there has to be a different approach. So as we practice meditation, we start to be able to trace our suffering back, or the cause of our stress and difficulty back. You know, if we're practicing the right way, sometimes people want to meditate because they can let it all go and get away from it all for a little while, and then have a nice meditation, and then, you know, you get out of the meditation hall and it's all back again. All of the stuff, all the difficulties of your life are back, and you can't wait until you're in that meditation hall again. So that's not really, you know, the right way of going about the practice, because it doesn't lead to any depth of happiness. It's just like a little temporary relief, like having a little holiday or something. So, you know, we need to look a bit more deeply. And as we keep practicing, keep looking, keep investigating, where did that problem come from? So we might catch it after we've had a blow up with somebody at work, and then we feel really bad afterwards, and we wish that we hadn't done that. And it's a big mess, going to take a long time to sort it out. And we wish, oh, I did that again. And I really wanted to practice right speech, and I really wish I hadn't done that. But it was just too much, I couldn't help it. And, you know. So that it might be that we can catch it there, when it's already happened. And then, rather than covering it up or blaming ourselves, then the path is to turn towards the feeling. Turn towards the feeling of, oh, painful, I wish I hadn't done that. That sense of remorse and regret that comes up. Turn towards that and let that lead you back, lead you deeper into where that angry or blaming speech came from. And then as we let it lead us back, then we see, you know, the holding or the tension around wanting things to be a particular way. It's always connected with grasping and attachment. Whatever suffering we might experience, whatever stress and suffering we experience in our life, is always, always, always connected with attachment, grasping. So then we can start to trace back, you know, what is the core there in my heart? What's the holding? What am I really wanting? What am I afraid of? You know, why did this situation happen? And then if we can really honestly trace that back, then we start to see I'm afraid that if I don't get it my way, everything's going to go wrong. And then, you know, maybe it's an unconscious thought. So we need to make these things conscious. And then we see that, oh, I'm afraid that if I don't get it my way, it's all going to go wrong. So when this person wanted to do something different, I blew up. But there's a better way of doing it. You know, we can sit down together, have a conversation. I can communicate my point of view and my needs, and then maybe that will lead to something more skillful, more useful. But if we don't know what's going on in our own minds, then we can't change the habits. Or we might be, have a lot of desire and justify it. You know, it's okay, it doesn't matter. You know, for little things, it's kind of okay. But desire can also create great troubles in people's lives. It can break up families. It can destroy. Actually, desire is the really the fuel that is destroying this planet, beautiful planet Earth that we live on right now. Short-term gain with no long-term reflection. So desire can be hugely destructive. But it's an urge within us that we all have. And then when we feel it, we want to move with it. We want to respond to it. And then all the thoughts come in, all the justifications as to why it's right, why we should, why it's okay, why it doesn't matter. So we need to get to know those movements, those urges of the mind. And when I say mind, I'm pointing to my heart when I say that, because it kind of begins here, in the heart, mind, in the citta, a feeling that arises, an urge, a pull or a yearning or a push, trying to make things different to how they are. So we need to get to know these qualities in our own minds in a very honest way. And it's not, you know, the Buddhist path, in these two little verses I read out, the word pure is in there. You know, the one who acts with a pure mind, happiness follows them, like the shadow that never leaves you. So you might think, well, pure mind, you know. So any unwholesome thought that I have is going to be really problematic, it's going to lead to a lot of difficulties, and then you start to judge yourself when you have a negative thought, an angry thought or a greedy thought. But it's not about trying to become a pure person and judging ourselves when our minds are filled with these, we're flooded, and when our mind is flooded with these qualities. But it's to know them and to have the capacity to stay with the feeling of wanting, and to stay with the feeling of not wanting, and to stay with the feeling of confusion when these arise, or of doubt. To stay with those feelings instead of immediately acting on them. And then when we stay with those feelings, we can bring right understanding to those feelings, knowing that they are arising dependent on past conditions. They're changing. It hasn't always been here. It hasn't always been like this. You know, you can remember yesterday. Was I so angry yesterday? No, I wasn't. Was I angry this morning? No, I wasn't. So the anger's just come up. It's really strong. And when it's present, it feels like absolute, complete me, what I have to do, but it's actually, it's a changing phenomena. So when we know that, we don't have to act on it, and we can allow ourselves to feel that discomfort, that uncomfortable feeling of anger, or that uncomfortable feeling of wanting, or of confusion or doubt. And then we're not caught, we're not flooded by those, what are known as the three poisons of the mind. They are simply there, and we can hold them in consciousness. And then when we develop the strength and the capacity to do that, you know, we immediately have a greater freedom. We're not slaves to our thoughts anymore and feelings. We can be with the feeling. We can know the thought. We can let it be there. let it change. It will change, just like everything. Everything in this world changes, whether we like it or not, whether we want it to or not, it does anyway. So we can, knowing that, we can allow these things to come into consciousness, be there and change. So this is really important to develop this strength of mind, and to, you know, in doing that, we gradually wear away what the Buddha is pointing to as the obscured mind, or the mind that's flooded with these three poisons. Gradually that wears away, because we've brought our attention clearly to what's going on. We're not feeding it anymore. And then gradually the mind naturally purifies. And we might think when we have a pure mind, then everything's really beautiful and open. And probably when you're fully enlightened, it is like that. But in the meantime, sometimes the pure mind is actually seeing really clearly the stuff that's going on, and it can look much worse than it did before we were looking carefully. So you have to be patient with it all, you know, and have compassion, because this human experience, it's complicated, it's messy, it's not the way we'd like it to be. And you know, when we have the patience and compassion, we can gradually transform that within our own mind. And as we gradually transform it within our own mind, we're also gradually transforming our life, the way we're speaking and acting, our intentions, what we put our energy into, starts to change. And then that influences the people around us. So little by little, then we're starting to change the world around us for the better, in a good way, by not relating to it through this grasping and pushing away. And a really key part to this process is to recognize our total interconnection. So, or interbeing, as Thich Nhat Hanh puts it very beautifully. So as we were sitting here together, I was just looking around the room, because there's a few people I recognize and a lot of people I don't, and just looking around the room at all of these different people. And I've got a nice seat here, I can see everyone. And just recognizing that here we all are in this space, we're breathing together. The room noticeably got warmer when we all sat down in here, so we're sharing the heat, sharing each other's body heat. We probably have some influence in the fact that we're all sitting in meditation. Then we're influencing each other in a good way. So if we're sitting at home, maybe we could sit for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, but sitting here together, we can sit for 45 minutes because we're helping each other. So just recognizing that's interbeing, interconnection. So it's really important to notice this. And you can see it even if you live alone. You can see it in every day. So when we eat, that is a totally interconnected experience. The food has been grown in a field, maybe somewhere in California if we're lucky. And you know, it's grown through the sun, the rain, the wind, the earth. It's been harvested by people, transported by people. The roads were built by people. You know, the truck that it was travelled in was made by people. It's come to a store. People working in a store. Somebody, you know, we've. And then there's our work, where we've been able to make the money to go and buy the food. So that's connected with other people. And then buying the food, bringing it home, preparing it, using the gas or the electricity. Where's that coming from? You know, cooking the food. Maybe the pan that you're cooking the food in, metal pan, where did that come from? It's part of the earth. It came out of the depth of the earth, that pan. And then it was made into a skillet or whatever it is. So just so we can, just noticing the reality of our interconnection in the very ordinary things of our life. And then as we do that, we start this, the sense of isolation, separation starts to break down. Because we're also very much educated to think a lot in this culture. And dwelling a lot in the thinking mind, it can be quite isolating. So reflecting, it is still using thought, but using thought in a way that interconnects rather than isolates. Using our thought or reflection to just recognize, not to make up or believe or anything, but to recognize our interconnection, interbeing with all of life, the whole of this planet Earth. It's kind of remarkable when you start to re-look. And as we get a greater sense of our interconnection, then that wanting and not wanting, it has less meaning. When I'm completely interconnected with all things, what do I want? What do I want to push away? It's all part of me, the beautiful and the ugly, the destructive, the creative. It's all part of me. It's all part of all of us, all the time. So just to start to put our minds, turn our minds in that way that we recognize that interconnection, interbeing. We take it in. And we can also do that with our own difficulties, you know, when we're feeling anger and we're staying with the feeling of anger and it's really painful and we really wish that we could just throw it all out there, but we know it's the wrong thing to do and we're Buddhist and let's just get over that one. You know, and then we can feel the feeling of anger and know that this is a shared experience. How many people in the world are feeling angry right now? It's not just me. Or how many people in the world are feeling frightened or anxious, you know? And then that also breaks down the sense of separate self, and we're part of this greater web of life, which we are anyway all the time. We just forget. So I want to also be clear that when I speak about opening and being with things as they are, this doesn't mean that we become really passive and we don't help or we don't benefit others. But we're not doing it from a place of greed or aversion. We're doing it from a place of understanding, wisdom and compassion. So I feel that at this time in the world, you know, there's many problems. There probably always has been, but it seems pretty intense at this point in history. And I feel it's a very good thing if anyone's motivated to get involved in whether it's, you know, helping to feed people who are hungry or helping to develop energy systems that are not exploiting the earth. Or I noticed that recently Venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi went out on a demonstration against fracking, which is a terribly destructive process for taking out a small amount of oil out of the earth. Terribly destructive. So people are starting, you know, I think it's a good thing to stand up and to actively do good and to prevent harm in the world. This is really important. But to do it from a place of clarity. And it might be that fear motivates us in the beginning. But then just to keep on transforming that fear into courage, into generosity, into strength. It can be done. So, you know, when we find ourselves in situations that are really difficult, you can just remember that first verse of the Dhammapada. You know, when one speaks or acts from an impure mind or from an obscured mind, then suffering or dukkha, difficulty follows one, just like the wheels of the cart follow the ox. So then you can know, okay, there's a cause to this. This is caused by something, and take an interest and see if you can find what is the cause. What is the cause of my suffering right now? The real cause, not the immediate blame. And this will lead to unraveling the cause, not continuously repeating the cause. And, you know, if you find yourself in a place of relaxation and openness, freedom, joy, then you can know that this is the fruit of acting, speaking and acting from a mind that isn't obscured by those poisons, that is in its natural state, that's open and clear. Just before I went to live in the monastery, which is quite a few years ago now, I had a really good reminder of this, because I was always quite conscientious about the environment and pollution and so on, and so I didn't drive. I lived in a city and I didn't drive, and I used public transit when I was in the city. And I used to visit a monastery that was about 17 miles away, something like that. And I would hitchhike to this monastery, get a ride there, and then maybe spend a day or two and come back. And the very last time I went there before I went to live in the monastery, I was hitching a ride, and I got a ride in a silver shadow Rolls Royce. And the guy drove me right to the door. They drove up outside this monastery, and all the monks were looking out going, "Who's that?" Then I got out and they're like, "Oh." They weren't expecting me. And so I thought, "Oh, that's really interesting. Silver shadow. You know, when you use your mind in the right way, happiness follows you like a shadow that never leaves you." So I hope there's something useful in what I've said tonight, and that you'll really take it to heart and use what I say. So, you know, I don't speak to entertain or to pass the time, but to really with a wish that you pick up the practice and that leads you to a greater happiness, and that in itself ripples out into the world and benefits others. It will naturally. So I'd like to offer that this evening. And we have about, I think, 10 minutes. Yeah. If people would like to have any questions, I'll be very happy to respond. Yes.
Your little story about having problems at work and getting angry no wonder I should take that out of my ear.
<That's it>.
And there's a, you know, sort of a, well, I'll use an engineering term, feedback time, uh-huh, in which you start to do something, and probably, as you say, you may go right through it, and you go, "There, I did it again."
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I've been around a long time in terms of dealing with this problem, and also being involved in meditation, and so I'm still doing it, right? And so I started putting notes up, uh-huh, you know, uh-huh, "Don't do that."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't done this one yet, but I was going to put a picture of my mother on my dashboard. Not that. So anyway, not that she would say "Don't do that." She was just a very loving human being.
Uh-huh, that's nice.
So
that's a good thing.
Anyway, so I think I'll put that one up. But I'm just wondering. You know, it's all we're all. You know, when we do practice, the practice is to try and wake up so that feedback time is short.
That's right.
Shorter and shorter, uh-huh, hopefully. But, you know, we can all use some tricks sometimes.
Tricks.
And I was,
mm-hmm,
thinking of the notes.
Uh-huh.
I'm not just,
yes,
bringing that,
mm-hmm,
up. But
yes,
if you can, you know, if you want to say anything concerning, mm-hmm, that. I think Jack Kornfield had some, you know, quick,
uh-huh,
techniques that, mm-hmm, you know, to try and minimize that.
Let me see.
Picture your mother. That
picture your mother. Your mother was very loving. That's a great thing. Well, I think little things like that, signs and notes, and maybe like something like pinch yourself before you're about to do it. Those little things. But the trick really is to actually catch it before it comes out of your mouth. And in my personal experience, it wasn't there was no quick fix. It was learning by feeling how painful it was after it had come out of my mouth and the consequences, and that being just a really strong motivation that I want to catch it sooner. But then if I can catch it before it comes out of my mouth, then there are different things you can do. So you can say, you can be really angry with that person, and then you can say, may you be well, may you be free from suffering in your mind. Suddenly turn the thought around, replace your angry, critical thought for an interconnected thought, a human, we're all part of the human race kind of a thought. So that's one thing, changing a harmful thought for a wholesome thought, maybe well, maybe free. And getting out the room can be good sometimes. You know, there's always an opportunity to have a bathroom break. So sometimes that's the best thing to do. And letting out some of the energy, because there's a lot of energy builds up with anger. So, I certainly had to do that in my monastic life at times. Get out of the room, lock yourself in the bathroom, let out some steam, you know. Or you don't have to lock yourself in the bathroom, but go somewhere, let off some steam where it's not going to harm anybody. Because you can't always hold it together, you know, so when it builds up. Or go out into nature and let it out. So, you know, where I live at the moment is very close to the ocean. And every now and again, I take someone out there who's got a lot of anger built up, and they yell at the ocean. And it's just this sense of, it's just energy. It's no longer anger, it's no longer personal, it's just energy, and the ocean just takes it all as part of what it is, you know. So that's also, there's also things you can do if you're not in too built up an area. I found that very helpful to be in nature and just let that out and let it be received. But I think I have to read Jack Kornfield's notes, because I don't have many clever tricks, actually. I don't know if you have anything. No. So for me, as I say, it was more of like of a process, and taking it back, and really taking it deep, you know, because those tricks they can stop it happening, but we've got to take it further back than that, to the root. And the real root is the sense of separate self. That's the real root.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you. My question is about some practicality. I have benefited a lot from Buddhist practice, but what would be a Buddhist stance if this person has cultivated his land and somebody else comes and takes it by force? What would be your stance?
Well, it really depends on what one can do, isn't it? You know, what is in your capacity to do. So, you know, it's a bit too abstract for me to be able to give a specific answer. I mean, you want to try to not, you don't want to use violence, first of all. That will not help, physical violence. But, I mean, what immediately comes to my mind is get a collective, you know, get people together to try to stand up against this force. But I mean, it's a very difficult thing, because as you say that, I think about, you know, these enormous corporations actually there's not even a person you can speak to that are doing that.
In the area we are living in, this area, we don't experience such a thing.
You don't experience.
We do not, as you said. Yeah. It sounds very abstract to you, because the experience in Western culture. is very different.
No, I understand that it happens. So, but I mean, what I mean is, it's not a very specific. If you, it's difficult. It's about something, you know. If I know the whole picture, I can give a more of a clear answer. But what I can say is that to use violence is not the answer. But to try to gain some strength, you know, collectively, and you know, put the word out. I mean, social media actually is very powerful now. That's one way to get the word out. I've been interested to see how individuals can have their story known about if it's really wrong. What's happened through social media, and that can put a pressure on those who are exploiting their power. So,
thanks.
Yeah. We've got one more question. Okay. Oh, yes. All right. At the back, yeah.
I'm very much aware of the accident in Richmond and the damage it must be doing to the planet with all that fire and combustion.
I don't know about it, actually. Could you tell me? Because we don't watch the news.
There was a big explosion in Richmond at, I don't know which oil refinery it was.
Oh, really?
And I feel troubled by it, and I was just thinking that maybe here collectively we might put our minds together.
Yeah, thank you.
To think about that.
Yes, thank you.
And healing our planet.
Thank you, yes. Let's do that. Yes. Let's just sit for a few minutes now. Thank you for that. And putting aside whatever our personal issues might be, then we can just do just what... What's your name, sorry?
Sabrina.
Sabrina. Do just what Sabrina was saying and bring to mind that local situation which has just happened, and also this whole planet Earth and all the healing that is needed. And just if we can just connect with our hearts, you can put your hand on your heart if it helps. Connect with your heart and breathe through an intention of healing and well-being for all beings who are struggling. Under the greed and hatred and delusion that has become so rife in the human mind. It's breathing it through, as though you imagine that you're breathing in. You can imagine that you're breathing in the suffering into your heart and that it just flows through your heart and out again. Just breathing it through. Sending out an intention of healing and well-being, loving kindness. Really deeply knowing that this is not separate from us. So we are part of this.